Speaking of that, though, it would be an interesting project for somebody who don't know who that would be, but to bone up on complexity theory, chaos theory, and I would also include Anthony Stevens' rewritten archetypes and give a presentation on that. I think it would be wonderful.
So what's this Anthony Stevens book?
Anthony Stevens, you know of him?
Yeah.
He has written a book called Archetype. Just Archetypes, I think. Archetypes. I think the subtitle is A Natural History of the Self. Does that sound right? And he wrote one early, and then he revised it, and Inner City published the revised edition. And again, there are only so many hours in a day, mm-hmm. but I think it's very, I mean, Stevens is very good. He's a medical doctor, and he has a PhD in psychology from Oxford, mm-hmm. and he's a psychiatrist. And he went through the ethnological research that supports Jung's theory of archetype. I mean, it's a very terse study, but this is what we need to address the scientific community with, is this kind of study.
Complexity, emergence, and chaos theory?
One course is called Complexity Theory, the other is called Chaos Theory, and then his book on archetypes. And I've tried to read the book on archetypes. It's good, it's just, it's so dense with scientific
references,
but he told me that he sent it to von Franz, and von Franz wrote back and said congratulations. Jung would be proud of this sort of work. So it's a really good piece of work. It's just very dense and very terse. Not because he can't write well, but because he's trying to give data to support the theory of archetypes.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because you think how important it was to Jung to be considered a scientist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think Stevens would see himself in that mm-hmm. tradition.
Have you read the author, George Hoganson, on archetypes and emergence?
I know. I didn't know there was such a thing. Well, you could add that to the list if you ever know anybody who wants to work on it.
Well, I think it might fit in also to that, to the class on projection.
It could very well, because we'll be talking about the archetypes behind science.
Because when they get into emergence, they talk about those mirror neurons.
And maybe if anybody ever works on it, they can talk about mirror neurons as well. There's a whole research field here. It's open.
That was an assignment I heard last time.
It's a big project, too. But I do have some sources that from that International Association of Union Studies, they had a big talk on the whole subject. And some of it I disagreed with, but some of it I couldn't evaluate because I didn't understand emergence.
Mm-hmm. I don't either, and it's it's a valid study. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think what it is applied to. Certainly, weather patterns fit this. Fractals are part of this.
Mm-hmm.
They do it with like business stuff. Too.
Probably, business cycles.
Business cycles and economics and how complex systems work.
That's right. They can apply it to anything that doesn't seem to have a pattern.
Or it's an attempt to find a nut. Why it's so relevant, I think, for us, it's an attempt to find another principle of relationship besides causality. It can't be described causally. So science is admitting causality has its limits. And it's coming up with a method to investigate it.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what's so important.
Right.
And it's a new emerging science, right?
And it's a new emerging mm-hmm. science. I think the center is in Santa Fe.
What's it called?
What's what called?
What you're talking about.
Well, it's something that's called chaos theory.
okay.
Sometimes it's called complexity theory, and there are differences, but they're all cousins.
And then in emergence.
Emergence, that's what you're saying.
That order emerges out of chaos. And, you know, if the two things I know of, one, you heard me talk about the ants, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other was, it's just if you take a tree, which looks totally random, the structural pattern of the leaf is analogous to the structural pattern of the tree itself, to the branches.
Mm-hmm.
That's Mandelbrot. The structure of a, I don't remember what, maybe it's, say, an iceberg, is similar to the structure, crystalline structure of an ice molecule.
And like river deltas and artery structure in a human being.
Yeah, the blood system and the flow of tributaries at a delta are parallel. So it's really, so it's like here's this order which appears to be random, but it duplicates itself. So it's not random. It's random that repeats itself, which is a contradiction in terms.
It sounds like you have to get enough perspective on it.
And you have to have enough perspective on it. And something, this is a little tangent, but we need a break anyway. Guy told me something really interesting lately, that in certain sponges, which are not light sensitive, in the DNA you can find the configurations for light sensitive cells. That completely contradicts form follows function. Only later versions of that sponge are light sensitive. So the DNA contains cells to produce organs that sponge doesn't even use. And only thousands of years later did that sponge become sensitive to light. So these little exceptions are opening up a whole interesting field of research, which is non-causal. That's, I think, why it's so important. What's that have to do with this? Well, Freud's causal. And Jung is trying to come up with a different way of understanding human beings that's not causal. And the sun, as consciousness, is causality. Okay, so, ready for more. Death. He sees a man standing on a dune. I'm on the second paragraph on 273, the second column. He goes to the ocean. He's standing by the ocean, and then he says, someone is standing there on the last dune. He is wearing a black, wrinkled coat. He stands motionless and looks into the distance. I go up to him. He is gaunt with a deeply serious look in his eye. I say to him, let me stand beside you for a while, dark one. I recognize you from afar. There's only one who stands this way, so solitary at the last corner of the world. And, of course, that's death. So here I'm just going to follow the text sentence for sentence for a while. He answers, stranger, you may well stand by me if it is not too cold for you. So we just had the sun and warm. Now we're investigating the cold. As you can see, I am cold and my heart has never beaten. I know you are ice and the end. You are the cold silence of the stones. You are the highest snow on the mountains and the most extreme frost of outer space. I must feel this, and that's why I stand near you. Well, just compare that with what's come. If the sun was everything, where is it useful now? It's not. So he's exploring his experience past understanding the goal of life as being a bright, shining sun. And we'll see, you know, pretty soon allusions to these visions of the ice covering Europe. And when he says, I have to feel it, that he can allow himself to experience within himself the energy behind what will be emerging in the war. which is the cold brutality of those wars. What leads you here to me, you living matter? The living are never guests here. Well, they all flow past here, sadly, in dense crowds. All those above in the land of the clear day who have taken their departure, never to return again, but the living never come here. What do you seek here? You know, first of all, I think those dead are referenced to all the people who will be killed in the war.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to remember what a horrific war that was. Just in that one battle of Verdun, we were talking about a million people were killed. That's like Indianapolis, wiped out, one battle. And these little villages we visit in France, there'll be 10 houses or 15 houses, and they have a roster to the dead. There'll be 30 guys killed. Each little village, it's just astounding, the extent of the slaughter. If you haven't seen Joy O' Noel, I highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. Everyone seen that?
Mm-hmm.
It's on video.
Oh, okay.
Joy O' Noel is French for Merry Christmas. And it's this true story of a German and a French dug in at the trenches fighting each other. And the dialogue between them. It's a true story. It happens around Christmas. Get a big box of Kleenex.
Yes.
Well, it just gives you some idea what a horror it was.
You know, it isn't a big area. You think of a million people?
Uh-huh.
My husband and brother-in-law went through the museum. I didn't watch
really, at Verdun?
Uh-huh.
Wow. Is that in Belgium now, or is that in France?
It's France.
Northern France.
Is
that in Alsace?
Alsace.
I'd like to see that.
It's pretty lonely there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's really... we were the only ones there when we were there.
Really?
Hmm. And it's just amazing that, you know, you think of a million people,
yeah.
It takes a lot of space, but
yeah.
It isn't a huge
wow.
plane.
Yeah. It was all one plane.
Wow. Well, I
would imagine.
Well, that was the line of resistance.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, I didn't went all the way across that area. It was the war line. And
uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Anyway, here he is dealing with death, where he was just all intoxicated with the sun. So what? What could that do you in a battle with a million dead? That's sort of putting it very crudely. But he's expanding into new levels of experience that are going to force him to reevaluate everything he's just said. Yeah, you could say that, and then this is going to negate a lot of what he said, or if not negate it, put it in perspective. And what he will come to is that is the spirit, which is not ego, which is not grand, but which is a meaningful participation in the events of life.
This is such a unique event in, I guess you could say, the individuation process, because this is just a historical thing that sort of entered like a foreign body into his process.
Absolutely. And he even says, my strange and unexpected path led me here as I happily followed the way of the living stream. And thus I found you. I gather this is your place, your rightful place. Yes, here it leads to the undifferentiable, where none is equal or unequal, but all are one with another. Do you see what approaches there? I see something like a dark wall of clouds swimming toward us on the tide. Look more closely, what do you recognize? Now here, I think, is the reference to the war.
Mm-hmm.
I see densely pressed multitudes of men, old men, women, and children. Between them, I see horses, oxen, and smaller animals. A cloud of insects swarms around the multitude. A forest swims near innumerable faded flowers and utterly dead summer. It's astounding what the guy was going through. They are all
just envision the human devastation, but the flora and the fauna and everything.
Yeah. And the emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
They are already near. How stiff and cool they all look. Their feet do not move, no noise sounds from their closed ranks. They are clasping themselves rigidly with their hands and arms. They are gazing beyond and pay no heed. They are all flying past an enormous dream. Dark one, this vision is awful. You wanted to stay by me, so get hold of yourself. Look. I see the first rows have reached the point where the surf and the stream flow together violently, and it looks as if a wave of air were confronting the stream of the dead together with the surging sea, whirling them up high, scattering them in black scraps, and dissolving them in murky clouds of mist. So.
Boy, that doesn't speak much for a rosy hereafter, does it?
No. And then comes the vision, which he talks about in Memories, if you've ever read it, in the chapter Confrontation with the Unconscious. The dark sea breaks heavily, a reddish glow spreads out in it. It is like blood. A sea of blood foams at my feet, the depths of the sea glow. How strange I feel. Am I suspended by my feet, or is it the sea, or is it the sky? Blood and fire mix themselves together, and a ball of red light erupts from its smoky shroud. A new sun escapes from the bloody sea. See, here's the new sun. That's why I was saying what I said before about the old sun. This is a new sun. That is not the same sun as the ego. That's the light of the unconscious. And rolls beamingly toward the uttermost depths. It disappears under my feet.
So it comes up and then it goes down again into the depths?
Yeah. Well, he's just getting glimpses of that there's something, even in the middle of all this terrible stuff, there is some healthier consciousness trying to emerge. But it's very fragile, and it's going to take him quite a while to figure out just what that is about.
Can you tell me when this is written?
January 1914.
He wrote this?
Yeah. He says earlier on the second day of, or he says earlier, he says coming up, I forget where it is.
Yeah. It's here on the
where is that?
Footnote, the previous page. Footnote 69, January 2nd, 1914.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the war is August 1914.
So he is really envisioning all that is going to come.
Yeah.
Almost prophetic.
Yeah. It is prophetic. Well, it is prophetic.
All that in it prophetic.
Yeah. And it comes in and it smashes just about everything we've already heard. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't come in until he's transcended the conflict between Ammonius and the Red Man. And who's going to come back after this but Ammonius and the Red Man? And both of them are going to be beaten up. It's really astounding to watch how that happens. So finally he gets rid of the pleasure principle, he gets rid of spirituality, and then, boom, this historical reality can come into him. It blows my mind. Okay, nice one. Bye-bye. So the next part. I looked around me and I saw the solitude expanded into the immeasurable and pierced me with horrible coldness. The sun still glowed in me, but I could feel myself stepping into the great shadow. See how he's come up against something bigger than all that sun talk we had.
So that sun that came up left something in him. Still glowed in me.
I think this is that earlier sun.
The ego sun?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of it in context of our image.
Okay.
You know, wondering which sun it is in him now. If he's got a piece of that dark sun, that red.
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I am inclined to say
The butt makes you right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I wonder. Let's keep that question open. But I think what we could say is going on. He's realizing, he's coming to a realization there are two different kinds of sun. But don't get too hung up on the sun. There are two different types of understanding. there's the understanding of the ego, and then there's the understanding of the point of view which comes from the self.
And so the son still grows in me, but makes it sound like the original.
Yeah, the original. That's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel myself stepping into the great shadow, saying, okay, so what good is that sun? I follow the stream that makes its way into the depths. See, that's where the other sun is.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly and unperturbed into the depths of what is to come. So it's like he somehow knew there would be a war. Because he wrote this before there was any hint. Oh, yeah, this is where he says it. And thus I went out in that night. It was the second night of the year 1914. An expectation filled me. I went out to embrace the future. The path was wide, and what was to come was awful. It was the enormous dying, the sea of blood. From it, the new sun arose. And an awful arose, awful, and a reversal of that which we call day. We have seized the darkness, and its sun will shine above us, bloody and burning like a great downfall. When I comprehended my darkness, a truly magnificent night came over me, and my dream plunged me into the depths of the millennia, and from it my phoenix ascended. So out of that, out of enduring the being pierced, the darkness, and the coldness, he's realizing there is another level of consciousness. But what happened to my day? Torches were kindled, bloody anger and disputes erupted. As darkness seized the world, the terrible war arose, and the darkness destroyed the light of the world, since it was incomprehensible to the darkness and good for nothing anymore, and so we had to taste hell.
Now, do you think that little bit was written after
the war? I was just asking myself the same question. I don't know. Because, he did do different versions of this.
He revised it and edited it, and so he could have added that at a later date. To make sense of the preceding writing.
I wonder if it would be worth even writing Son of Sun Design and asking what he thought. I'm curious about that. Well, I'll tell you what I will do. John Peck and a friend of mine are doing this same study in Hartford. John Peck is one of the guys that worked on this manuscript. And I'll ask John, through my friend, I could call John too, he's kind of hard to get a hold of sometimes, what he thought about the dating of that passage. They certainly would have discussed that, I think.
It really, obviously, this passage, it would sound so that it comes at a break even.
Yeah.
Before the other part. The second night of the year.
Because if I remember in memories, he says, I had no idea what mm-hmm. these were pointing to. Be interesting to. I really didn't pay attention to it, but now I think maybe it would be important to pay attention to. Preface or introduction, the Sam Dazani, who did the bulk of the editing, went through all the different versions, and I'm curious at what point the final version was written. Maybe he tells it. I'll go back and look at that too. Because what we have here is a reworked text. You remember it went from the black book to another draft, mm-hmm. so It could very well be that this was later. I just don't know. So the question is, did he know that they pointed to a war? Or was this written after the war? And then he realized, oh my gosh, that's what they were talking about. I just don't know. But back to the psychological stuff. I saw which vices the virtues of this time changed into. That sounds just like Freddie. Now, let me see. He said he read Nietzsche as a college student, remember? So, how your mildness became hard, your goodness became brutality, your love became hate, your understanding became madness. Why did you want to comprehend the darkness? But you had to, or else it would have seized you. Happy the man who anticipates this grasp. Let's see. Just trying to think how we can shorten it here a little bit. Maybe we should just look at it, sentence by sentence. Did you ever think of the evil in you? Maybe go down to that sentence, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down in the paragraph that starts with did. You locked Satan in the abyss for a millennium, and when the millennium had passed, you laughed at him since he had become a children's fairy tale. That sound familiar to anyone?
Mm-hmm.
From what book is that foreshadowing? No, I don't think so. Where does he look at history in 2,000-year periods?
Ion.
Yeah. And the idea, now, those of you, I know, Karn, you may know your Bible better than me, which wouldn't take much. But I believe it's biblical that Satan will be bound for 1,000 years. Does that anyone know?
It's not biblical, it might be. Some of the Bible, there are some things about the Bible that were written in the Bible, and then there are some things that came along as commonly accepted. There are some parts that is commonly accepted. He talks about, when he's talking about the virgin and the virgin rising up, well, that bodily into heaven. What do you think about the, in the 1950s when the Pope did the whole
The assumption.
He talked about, in one of the books, about some things are in the Bible literally and others have become part of the history of the church. They were never written anywhere, but yet everybody believes, particularly around the Catholic Church.
I think it's in the book of Revelation, but I'm not sure, where Satan is bound up for 1,000 years and then he's loosened, and that will be what the apocalypse is, that he brings back all that fire and brimstone. Of course, you know, that is taken by believers as a theological statement. Jung takes it as a psychological statement that Christianity has denied the existence of the shadow, so that, like a pendulum swing, it's got to swing back the other way. And what World War One and Two was the shadow that had been bound up making its entry back. So in a way, he's saying that to Ammonius, too. that spiritual position you had, Ammonius, was at the cost of repressing the shadow. And if it doesn't get you, it'll get your subsequent generations, and we're living through that now.
And Zarathustra, too, because of the split.
The Zarathustra would be the same thing as Satan here. Yeah, it's the same idea. I think that's
a little bit strange that he said, since he had become a children's fairy tale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, his fairy tales usually are pretty honest about the shadow existence. I agree with you that it's much more realistic than most people would write for children.
Yeah.
And much darker.
But I think what he's saying is, at that point in time, people saw Satan as, as a Christian, you might see Zeus and those gods who were gods to the people at that time, but later on, when Christianity took over, they were just fairy tales. They didn't have any power. And what he's saying is, we had gotten to a point in our Christianity that Satan was a fairy tale, but it's going to come back, but he's going to have all the power over the next 30 years. And it's going to devastate everybody. Because at that point in time, it was all, everything's going to be rosy from now on. We have the science, and everything's going to go great, and it's all going to be progress and better each year. And then there's a totally flip on its head, because they saw Satan as something that was archaic in the past, and he could come back up with a ton of power.
And taken seriously enough.
That part of the psyche was considered obsolete. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think he means like superficial twaddle or something.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the deeper sense that what we really mean of fairy tales. That's significant statements of the psyche.
But at that point, weren't they considered significant?
No, probably not.
He brought that back. We see that now.
Mm-hmm. Cute little stories. Again, always remember where we've come from when we read. We need the coldness of death to see clearly. See how that sun that he talks so much about is getting limited.
I like that sentence for that. You do not know which devils are greater, your vices or your virtues. But of one thing you are certain, that virtues and vices are brothers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That is one thing you get aware of when you do inner work. How often good intent leads to trouble? Sometimes you get mad as hell at somebody and it has a good effect. You are not forced to live eternally, but you can also die, since there is a will in you for both. Life and death must strike a balance in your existence. So again, I think why I see that so important is this brilliant son is being reevaluated, and he will be coming up with something, another principle of understanding. That's pretty much that paragraph. Then I think we can look at then, he's continuing talking about death, the value of death. Look at the second paragraph, first column on 275. And if you remember memories, here is the other vision he had, which I referred to earlier. If you accept death, It is altogether like a frosty night and an anxious misgiving, but a frosty night in a vineyard full of sweet grapes. Page 375,
okay.
First column, second paragraph. If you accept death, it is altogether like a frosty night and an anxious misgiving, but a frosty night in a vineyard full of sweet grapes. So that's that dream he had of, or vision he had of, grapes being turned sweet by the cold. You will soon take pleasure in your wealth. Death ripens. One needs death to be able to harvest the fruit. Without death, life will be meaningless, since the long-lasting rises again and denies its own meaning. To be and to enjoy your being, you need death, and limitation enables you to fulfill your being. So, you know, on the practical scale, I think he's saying, what I've got to do, I've got to accept this depression, which is the same thing as the world destruction, and try to understand it. Focus my attention on it.
This may be neither here nor there, but I think it's interesting that it talks about the ice on the grapes, because one of the more expensive types of wine and the better wine is the ice wine.
Really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Where they actually let the grapes freeze on the vine and then make wine out of that.
Germans did that.
It's the iced wine, it's a dessert wine, and it's really complex and very... usually
a
very high alcohol content and very sweet
because the juice is just kind of thick. Interesting. Very interesting.
Hmm.
I just wanted to go back. The next, I guess, we'll look at the second section of the first column, the one to third line down. But in the shadow world, the other rises, the red sun. There again, I think, is why I felt that this is about reevaluating what the sun is.
So the red sun would be the good sun?
Yeah, well, it'd be the sun. Well, it'd be this one here.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be the light of the self.
Having a hot flash when you're talking about the sun.
I'm sitting here going,
I'm
going to
talk about this. It'd be great if we got some sort of bonus every time that happens.
Yeah.
Some sort of credit to the soul or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would be well deserved.
That on the sun.
Well, it makes the cold look good. Huh?
Yeah, I was going to say, we need to talk about the ice and the frost and all that.
Great. Ice on the grapes.
Mm-hmm. That wine makes you hot, too, though.
That's sugar.
Alcohol.
It rises secretly, unexpectedly, and my world revolves like a satanic apparition. I think we've pretty much done that. I suspect blood and murder alone are still exalted.
Now that's
their own peculiar beauty. You hear men say that about war, you know, the beauty. I was just watching Ken Burns' Civil War.
Yeah.
And the soldiers talk about the beauty of the massacre.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's something you actually have to participate in to understand. Perhaps so. In the Civil War.
Patton used to say, I love it, oh, I love it. That he was quoted as president.
Who?
Patton.
Oh, Patton. Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, he was kind of crazy, too.
Were they saying it in the sense that they appreciated life more?
No.
Oh, no.
Not that I could tell.
Yeah, I don't know.
That last part, one can assume the beauty of bloody acts of violence. I guess.
You know, they have said on some of the, the Army Reserve is committing suicide at a very high rate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying it's not because of flashbacks to the horror of being over there in the war, it's because they come back here and everything's monotonous and their marriages are, you know, they have fight with their wife and they're having financial struggles, and it was much clearer to them over there what their duty was, what their life was about. So it's not the horror of the war, it's the horror of the mundane.
Well, so is the fact that everybody over there is a hero.
Right.
You can talk a lot about that. Don't get that up.
Maybe that's kind of...
Well, I can tell you, I know some very old former soldiers who just still can talk about nothing as glorious.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's also a big sense of brotherhood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That
makes a big difference.
Yeah, I was watching part of that and I said, nothing compares to what we felt when we were together as mm-hmm. brothers. When you come back, your family, your wife, your kids, nothing else.
Well, after years and years after Hugh and the Navy, mm-hmm. we had a reunion of his ship. You have never seen such little boys. Oh, this was my dad. That was right. Oh, I missed when I said those dinner. It was really funny, but they were really, really excited.
Mm-hmm. But if you're in a life or death situation, yeah. Everything is
heightened.
Uh-huh.
Good and the bad.
Well, there's an instinct for it, too.
Yes, there must be.
Well, which, what's her name, proved with her chimps.
Jane Goodall, yeah, because chimps conduct war.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something natural about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thought. I think there is. Oh, look at little boys, you know,
but
my children were little.
Oh, yeah.
It was very popular among goody-two-shoe mothers not to have guns.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, what they did is broke off branches.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And those
guns. We played war all the time as kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But sorry. The beauty of go out and murder. I mean, I can understand, you know, the loyalty and the brotherhood and the heightened sense of...
If you're fulfilling an instinctual urge, mm-hmm. there's beauty in that, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. I can see that.
Well, remember, this is the unconscious speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what that's probably the way the unconscious feels about war, which is why we keep having it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where Jung would take it then interpreting it is that we can see the beauty in our own inner battles. Because we naturally want to flee from inner conflict. We want to flee from misery and despair and depression. And remember, he's just been talking about the sun. So the sun is saying what is good is light. Don't look at your depression. Don't look at your conflict. Don't look at your despair. Don't look at your heartache, you know. And he's saying it's just as beautiful to look at that as it is. It's just as beautiful to look at your darkness as it is to look at your lightness. That's where I would go with it.
Look at all those nature films. I mean, a lot of them... You know, they did that whole thing on the earth and nature and stuff, and some of that was very vivid and
mm-hmm.
cruel, and people watched that and saw it.
I don't know what nature is after this.
There's a fascination with it because, as some of you know, my husband is a reenactor in the Civil War. I just don't get it. I still don't get it.
And my grandchildren go every year to see him.
Do they really?
Oh, really? It's kind of weird.
Time magazine has a really very good article on the Civil War and how so much of it has been, well, covered up, and the different, again, the factions, very much like the play, that, you know, the South wants to believe that it was states' rights, and the North wants to believe it was, you know, about slavery, and, you know, there was a mix of both, and then I had never even really understood it about how the development of the West played into it and how they wanted to be able to have slaves in the West, and as it developed and the North was saying no, and how the people that formed the Constitution, you know, knew they were leaving this terrible dilemma for us to solve, but hoped it would be solved later in order to get, you know, the Constitution passed, and then how people were so anxious to cover it up with harmony. And in the play they talked about that, but the blacks and whites and Marion just, you know, wanted that to go away eventually. You know, they didn't want to face it. And that's what we did as a country too, and that maybe now, you know, it's beginning to come to light that we've got a lot of work to do on that. And that's why I thought it was so interesting that I too watched a lot of that Civil War, which was really powerful. And then this play, and I don't know, there's just a lot, you know, and with the racism that's going on now and how people have such strong feelings about that, I think it's just a really interesting time.
And Steven Spielberg is going to make a movie on Lincoln.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, Sally Field is going to play the Mary Todd.
Well, in fact, there's one coming out, I think, tomorrow called The Conspirators,
right.
And it's about all the people, Robert Redford, yeah, all the people who were part of the conspiracy to kill Lincoln, and they were going to kill the Vice President and the Secretary of War, and the people, they stayed at this woman's boarding house, and she was also tried and hung, actually, because they believed that she was part of the conspiracy, and that I guess her son was really a part of it, and I think she maybe got drawn into that because of him, and that he then deserted her. So anyway, it's just interesting how all this is bubbling up.
Did he desert her, or did she take the fall for
it? Well, I don't know, and I don't know that much about it. Yeah. But
has anything happened to the others?
Oh yeah, six or seven were all hung within a month of when Lincoln was killed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that sounds like it should have been taught in grade school. I never heard of it.
Yeah. I think there's so much that just we don't know. And then what is true and what's not? What's, you know, it's like history is written by the winners, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's going to be interesting.
Well, more to come. Let's say we've gotten through the first paragraph in the second section on the first column of 275. So next time we'll start with, but it is
unacceptable.
But it is the unacceptable. It's just, that won't take long. I think I had you read
277.
We might get past that. We might not. The next chapter is really long. Well, why don't you try to read it? We won't nearly get through it, but just read till you get tired. Maybe read, let me see, read to 26. Read to the right before number 2. On 279. I'm only good for reading about a page or two at a sitting, and I get tired.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, if you just read to me, that can be pretty soon with this material.
So I'll say read to before number two on 271.
Well, you have to trot off and look at a whole bunch of other stuff usually while you're reading it. So.
Right.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, that brings me to the point. Doesn't he talks about being stung from behind in the heel. We haven't gotten to that yet, but I was looking down here, and it says the Ikim transformation, the symbols of the libido.
Yeah.
Well.
Wait, is that 70?
What page? 275, that next paragraph. But the footnote is 78. But it says CWB. What's CWB?
Volume 5 is Symbols of Transformation.
Okay,
volume B is the earlier version of Volume 5. Transformation of the libido.
Because I kept going back to volume 5,
no.
And I never did.
There's a separate volume called Transformation and Symbols of the Libido.
Thank you. Right.
And that's volume 5?
That's volume B.
B.
B is the earlier version of volume 5.
Oh.
Volume 5 is Symbols of Transformation. Volume B is the transformation and. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And didn't he have a dream or something?
I thought
he had a dream about getting bitten in the.
Not that I remember, but no. He could have. But it's not an infrequent dream.
Right.
It's the beginning of analysis, whether we can let ourselves get bit by the unconscious or not.